As promised, tonight we're going to have a shiur devoted to Hanukkah themes. And next week as well, we're also, it's not a continuation, it's a separate shiur for Hanukkah next week. So, you know, even if you miss tonight, even if you're not here tonight, which I guess doesn't really apply to anyone here, but even if you're not here tonight, you can still come next week and catch up. I wanted to share tonight some thoughts that are expressed by Rabbeinu B'chaye in his Sefer Kad HaKemach. So let me just elucidate some of those words I just said, and you know, we'll see how to proceed from there. Rabbeinu B'chaye ben Osher is the author, a medieval Spanish author of a commentary on the Torah. Last year, here in Shul, actually on Wednesday nights, we devoted our Wednesday night shiur to learning Rabbeinu B'chaye on the Parsha, the three big green volumes put out by Moshe Rav Kook of Rabbeinu B'chaye al HaTorah, beautiful, beautiful commentaries. Rabbeinu B'chaye was a Talmud, he was a student of the Rashba, of Shlomo Ben Aderet, again one of the outstanding names among the medieval Rishonim. The Rashba was the Rav in Barcelona in Spain, and Rabbeinu B'chaye was his Talmud. In addition to compiling his commentaries on the Torah, Rabbeinu B'chaye ben Osher also wrote a sefer that's referred to as the Kad HaKemach, literally the jug of flour. Okay, and in the Kad HaKemach, again, Kemach, you'll understand, flour is a metaphor for Torah. So this is a jug that's filled up with Torah thoughts that he wanted to share. The Kad HaKemach is a very fascinating sefer in that it's arranged alphabetically. He basically has a number of essays. How many essays? A bunch. He has a number of essays. I didn't count how many essays, but a number of essays that are arranged alphabetically, and they deal with different topics. And, you know, in focusing on these topics, he shares many, many unique Torah thoughts with regard to these particular topics. So one of the entries that Rabbeinu B'chaye has is an entry which he entitles Ner Chanukah, right? The candles, the lights of Chanukah. And not so surprisingly, the point of the entry is to deal with themes that have to relate to Chanukah. Okay, so that seems to be a good place to start when talking about the holiday of Chanukah. Interestingly enough, the entry in the edition I have of Rabbeinu B'chaye, the entry itself runs about 7 pages or so. I would say about 3.5 of those pages, in other words, about half of the entry itself, Rabbeinu B'chaye is not talking about Hanukkah per se, but he spends a lot of time talking about light. Now, light clearly has what to do with Hanukkah, right? We are kindling Hanukkah lights. Right, but the truth is, Rabbeinu B'chaye, in this entire section, doesn't really talk that much about Hanukkah and light. He talks about the concept of light in Yiddishkeit in general. So I want to share with you first some of his comments with regard to that, then comment on them a little bit, and then, you know, kind of work from there to developing some thoughts that are relevant to the upcoming holiday of Hanukkah. The Rebbe B'chaye starts off by citing a pasuk from Tehillim, which most of us probably know. You see, even when we're not doing Tehillim, we can't get away from Tehillim. Okay, it's a good thing. Who wants to get away from Tehillim? But he quotes a pasuk from Tehillim, Tzadi Zayin, Or Zorua Latzadik, light is sown for the righteous, Uliyishrei Lev Simcha, and for those who are straight of heart, for them is sown simcha, or happiness. And for a good 3 pages or so, the Rabbeinu B'chaye spends time just trying to elucidate this pasuk, Or Zorua Latzadik, Uliyishrei Lev Simcha. He quotes in that connection a Gemara at the end of the first parak of Tainus, the Gemara in Daf Tesvav and Aleph, where the Gemara says as follows: Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak said, Lo hakol la'ora, v'lo hakol la'simcha. not everyone merits light, and not everyone merits happiness. And he goes on to explain, Sadikim la'ora v'yesharim la'simcha. Sadikim merit light, yesharim, those who are straight of heart, merit simcha, or happiness. In other words, different types of good people merit different types of rewards. Sadikim get ora, yesharim get simcha. How do we know that? So it goes on to quote the pasuk, which we just cited from Tehillim. Sadikim la'ora diksiv or zoru ala tzadik. The pasuk says that light is sown for the tzadik, for the righteous person. V'li yesharim simcha, and the fact that yesharim, people who are straight hearted, get simcha, get happiness, that's the end of the pasuk, diksiv uli yishrei lev simcha. So what this Gemara is saying, again, without too much explanation, is that there are two types of people, two types of good people, tzadikim and yesharim. Tzadikim merit ora, light, yesharim merit simcha, happiness. Now, to understand anything more than that, we have to try to define four different terms. What does tzaddikim mean? What does yesharim mean? What does ora mean? And what does simcha mean? Right? In other words, you know, we can translate those terms. But clearly, the Gemara is telling us that all of these terms are used in a very, very specific sense. They're not just tzaddikim and yesharim are not interchangeable, and ora and simcha are not interchangeable, so we need to get a better handle on what all of these terms mean from the perspective of Chazal, and then we can understand a little bit better what the Gemara is telling us. So, with that in mind, let's take a look at the Rabbeinu B'chaye. Writes Rabbeinu B'chaye as follows: Derech Hakosuf lechanos klal kol hatovos shebaolam b'loshon or. The approach of the Tanakh, says Rabbeinu B'chaye, is to refer to any good thing in life, anything positive in life, is called light. Veina kavona or mamash. It doesn't have to mean light in the literal sense of the term. When the Psukim and Tanakh talk about light and light and light, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to mean illumination in the narrow sense of the term. Anything good in life is called light by the Tanakh. Right, those who are watching their calories can certainly appreciate that you know, when something is called light, it's a good thing, right? But what does light mean in this context? Shalva v'hashket v'kavod ubrius. Light from the perspective of Tanakh means shalva, tranquility, hashket, inner peace, kavod, glory or honor, and brios and health. All of these terms, which again have nothing to do per se with light, can be metaphorically referred to as light by the Tanakh. So that's a nice idea. He goes on to give a couple of examples. Miloshan la Yehudim hoysa ora v'simcha v'sason v'ikar. Right? After the miracle of Purim takes place, and Haman is hanged and the Jews are saved, so it says, la Yehudim hoysa ora, the Jews had light. Now, what does that mean? Right? Clearly, light in that context means something metaphoric. It doesn't mean that before Haman was hanged, the Jews had a hard time getting a hold of candles. And then after Haman was hanged, all of a sudden, candles became available. You know, like all of a sudden, you could find a lantern. You know, it doesn't mean that. Like, Yehudim Hoysa'ara means that they had good things, however you want to define that exactly. Good things happened to the Jews. But we see that the Torah calls that ora, light. Or another example, kumi ori, kiva oreich, a pasuk in Yeshaya, right, we adapt this pasuk for lechadodi, which we say Friday night, rise up and shine, because your light has come. The Navi Yeshaya is addressing the Jewish people, and he's predicting the ultimate redemption, the ultimate geula of the Jewish people. Kumi ori kiba oreich. Get up and shine, because your light has come. Now again, get up and shine doesn't mean, you know, let yourself glow, you know, rub yourself with phosphorus and just let everybody see you while you glow in the dark. That's not what it means, right? It means get up and let things be good, right? Because your light has come, you know, times are now good, right? Again, in general terms. But the Navi is using the term or, light, as a description for anything that's good. Or, another pasuk, Shmuel HaNavi, David HaMelech, in Sefer Shmuel, has a poem where he says regarding God, Ki ata neiri, you God are my candelabra, right? You are my candle. Now, what do you mean? God is my candle. God is not my candle, right? I mean, that's not typically how we think of the Ribbono Shel Olam. It means metaphorically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides me with light, and it doesn't mean Hashem provides me with light in the literal sense of the term. It means Hashem provides me with everything good. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be described as you are Neiri, you are my candelabra. Right? But again, the metaphor of light as being a metaphor for everything that's good is something, says Rabbi Bechaye, that runs through the Tanakh. V'chein timtza behepich. The reverse is true as well, says Rabbi Bechaye. Shaksuvim karin klal kol haraos. Choshech. The psukim in Tanakh refer to all of the evil things that happen in the world as darkness. And again, darkness here is used as a metaphor, not as literal darkness. So, for instance, kimo vaksil b'choshech holeich. The fool walks in darkness, says Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei. Right. Now again, that isn't meant literally that the fool walks in darkness, right? You know, fools have lights in their apartments also, right? It's not as if, you know, you have to have a certain IQ in order to be able to get a light bulb. You know, foolish people also have lights, right? But he walks in darkness in the sense that he walks in ignorance or in, you know, a state of evil things. If someone is complaining about how his life is so miserable, the pasuk refers to his days, to his life and his existence as darkness. May that day, the day on which I was born, says Eov, bemoaning his life, that day should be choshech, it should be darkness. Again, it doesn't mean darkness in the literal sense. It means it should be bad. Ad shetimsa b'mishenosein eitzo she'ena haguna, shekro hakosuv machshich. And he points out an interesting thing. He says, if you look in Sefer Eov, you find that if someone gives bad advice, Sefer Eov refers to the person who misleads you as a machshich, as someone who darkens the area around you. Mize machshich eitza b'milin. Right? The pasuk in Eov says, who is the one who gives words of advice that are machshich, that darken and clouden the area around us? So in other words, light is in general a metaphor for everything good. Darkness is in general a metaphor for everything which is bad. Right? We need to understand that just before we can go any further. Okay, so Ora is a very wonderful thing. What's the difference, going back to this Gemara in Tainus, what's the difference between Sadikim and Yesharim? Right, it says that light is for the Sadikim, happiness is for the Yesharim. So what's a Sadik and what's a Yasha? It's very interesting. Here you have a debate among the medieval commentaries about how to interpret this Gemara. Rashi writes in this Gemara, Yesharim adifi mitzadikim, that Yesharim are on a higher level than Tzadikim. Again, Yesharim means those who are pure of heart, straight of heart. Yashar, right? Everything is straight like an arrow. You know, we even have the expression in English. So Rashi writes that Tzadik is a good guy, that's true. A Yashar is even, you know, on a higher level than the Tzaddik.
They don't try to find
right.
anything around me.
Right. This is straight, straight. You know, they do things exactly straight. Now, according to Rashi, then, it comes out that whereas the tzaddik, who's on a lower level, gets the reward of aura, of light, the yashar, who's on a higher level, gets the reward of simcha. It's interesting to note that, I would say, certainly many, if not most, medieval commentators disagree with this Rashi, and they flip around who's considered to be on the higher level. As many Mefarshim say, no, the Yashar is on the lower level, the Tzaddik is on the higher level. Right? That position is taken by the Rashba in his comments to this Gemara. And again, not surprisingly, because as we pointed out, Rabbeinu Bechaye is the Talmud, the student of the Rashba. Rabbeinu Bechaye follows his Rebbe, and he says the Tzaddik who merits light is on a higher level than the Yashar, who merely merits simcha, who merely merits happiness. Okay, so good. The tzaddik is higher than the yashar. Aura is higher than simcha. What do these words mean? I mean, we're using these words, but what exactly are they meant to imply? So, let me just read to you a little bit from what the Rabbeinu Bechaye says. He says, "Hatzadik hagamur, the true complete tzaddik, shelo chata, who doesn't sin." Now, presumably, Rabbeinu Bechaye means by this that he mostly doesn't sin, because again, virtually impossible to have somebody who never sins. Adam and Tzadik Baruch Hashem Yasta Tavlo Yasta, right? And there's nobody never sins. But okay, but some people come pretty close, right? So the tzaddik, the true tzaddik, who's pretty close to never sinning, who betachlis hashmira v'hashkacha, he's watched over God. He's watched over by God to the fullest extent. God extends His providence and His protection to this tzaddik to the ultimate extent. V'roy hu lioso klal kol atovo shebaolam shikra an or zorua. And this tzaddik, who's so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, merits having all of the great things in the world come to him, which are referred to as aura. Again, according to Rabbeinu Bechaye's definition, aura, light, is a catch-all term for everything good. The true tzaddik, who barely sins, merits to have everything good come his way. Lefi shehu adovek v'Hashem yisbarach, since this tzaddik clings to God in the ultimate sense of the term, kein hashkochas Hashem yisbarach dovka b'tzaddik. Thus, in response, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's providence clings to this tzaddik. So in other words, tzaddik means someone who has the ultimate devotion to God, and his reward is aura, light, which again in this context means a sense of total pervading hashkacha. God micromanages all of the details of his life and gives him everything good. That's the tzaddik. What about the yasha? Right, the second level. So writes the Rabbeinu Bechaye, "Achar shehizkir inyan hatzadik hanishmar min harik min hamikrim l'rov ma'aloso zuchuso." After the pasuk talks about the tzaddik who is enveloped by God's protective bubble, so to speak, and it's watched over that everything should be good, "Amar ki yishrei lev." It talks about the yishrei lev. Who are yishrei lev? Hamidabrim hayosher vachoshvim osam belibam. They speak of righteousness and they think about righteousness in their hearts. V'she'ein ma'alosam gedola kol kach kemailas hatzadikim. They're not on the madrega of the tzadikim. Right? If I was to paraphrase this Rabbeinu Bechaye, I would say that these yisharim, this yashar, is someone who's good, who has a good outlook on life, who does the right things in life, but doesn't quite rise to that level of constant devotion and attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the way I would put it, you know, the yashar, the tzaddik is a righteous man. The yashar is what we would call a good guy. You know, you could be a good guy. You know, being a good guy is not the same as being a tzaddik, but he's a good guy. You know, does what's right, thinks what's right. You know, his values are right, his aspirations are right. All right, you know, so he doesn't walk around the whole day, you know, clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, but he's a good guy. You know, he's certainly a guy you'd want on your team, you know, so to speak, in terms of someone you'd want to associate with in life. The Yashar doesn't merit Ora. Ora means the utter providence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where Hashem makes everything turn out to be well. However, he does merit Simcha. What's Simcha? Kishiyovo aleihem mikrim. When this Yashar experiences things in life that are tragic and that are difficult and that are not Ora, that are Choshech, that are darkness, Einom boatim bohem. Right? They don't reject them. V'lo katsin b'yisurim. They don't say, I can't take this. Elamat stikin aleihem es hadin. Right, the Yashar says, look, life is difficult, but I'm going to experience these things b'simcha. I accept whatever God is giving me with equanimity and even with a degree of happiness. That's the simcha of the Yashar. Right? Or zoru ala tzadik uli Yisrael simcha. So again, according to Rabbi Bechaye's interpretation, let's just try to unpack what this pasuk is telling us. The person who clings to God, the tzaddik, will get Ora, will get God's absolute providence, and he'll make everything wonderful. The person who's a good person, but may not be on that level of a tzaddik, of absolute closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, may not merit Ora, but will certainly merit Simcha. In other words, God will give that person the strength to bear the difficulties in life with happiness and equanimity. Now, okay, so that's an interesting interpretation of the pasuk, and you know, one that goes back to the Gemara's interpretation in Tainus. Let's take this idea of Rabbeinu Bechaye and suggest the following. Again, up till now has been more or less Rabbeinu Bechaye straight. Here on in, my own comments. So if you don't like it, you get your money back at the end of the shiur. If you don't like it, don't blame the Rabbeinu Bechaye, it's all my fault. But, let me suggest the following. Clearly, it's rare for us to reach the level of tzaddikim. Right? Again, tzaddik, the way Rabbeinu Bechaye defines it, is someone who has the sense of constantly clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not just that you're a good person, right? But that you really have this sense of the constancy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your life, the sense of constantly being connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a very, very high level for us to be able to aspire to. And as a result, you know, Ora, this sense of direct divine providence, is something that the majority of us don't experience on a constant level. In other words, there may be times in life, you know, where we talk about Hashkacha Pratis moments, you know, there was this moment, this experience, where we felt God's hand in a very, very real way. I mean, hopefully, from time to time, we feel things like that. Most of us, again, I may be talking to tremendous tzaddikim over here, so I apologize if that's the case, but, most of us don't go through life, you know, constantly having that sense that, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was moving this and moving that, you know, that constant Hashkacha Pratis. We feel it from time to time, but, you know, it's hard for most of us to feel that on a constant level. Again, I may be wrong if I'm speaking out of line for anyone here, so, please forgive me. But I think that's true for most of us. Most of us live on the level, if we're Zalcha to it, of Uli Yishrei Lev Simcha. In other words, where we try to be Yisharim, in other words, we try to do what's right, we try to think what's right. You know, we may not cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu constantly, but we try, you know, to have the right sense of values. And we hope that we can merit to have Simcha, in other words, you know, that we can deal with the difficulties in life as they come up with equanimity and with happiness. You know, we hope that we're zochet to that level. The level of Or Zaruah LaTzadik, you know, is something that we oftentimes find to be beyond us. Yeah. He doesn't make any such distinction. No, women are all tzidkaniyos. That's my wife told me that. What's that?
No, women have like a different. Maybe women feel the connection to actually. So we don't have tzitzis, and we don't have.
Right. Again, what he's talking about is a sense of constantly feeling connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maybe you do. I don't want to speak on behalf of anybody else in the room, but speaking for Ani HaKatan, you know, for little old me. For little old me, I'm not zochet to have that, you know, that sense of constant HaKadosh Baruch Hu is walking by your side. I wish I would, you know, but I think most of us in life, you know, we try to do the right thing, we try to have the right values, but the sense of, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like a tangible presence that I can feel every single moment of the day. That's a very, very high madrega. It's a madrega that most of us are not zochet to so much. However, there's a reason Rabbeinu Bechaya goes into this whole discussion when talking about Ner Chanukah. Because, of course, Ner Chanukah is characterized by bringing Ora, by bringing light into the world. It's not just by accident that he's talking about this pasuk as he, you know, in his entry on Ner Chanukah. I would suggest, and again, this Rabbeinu Bechaya does not quite say this, but I think he's going in this direction. I think this is the logical conclusion from what he's saying. But part of what makes Chanukah special is on Chanukah we have that unique opportunity to raise ourselves up from the level of Yishrei Lev Simcha to the level of Or Zoruah LaTzadik. In other words, on Chanukah we have the ability to be able to feel God's presence in our lives, not just as something we believe in intellectually as a kind of abstract idea, but in a visceral sense, to be able to feel Hashem's presence, to feel that sense of dveikus b'Hashem, of clinging to God, and in turn to experience a little bit of that aura, of that sense of light, of everything good, which comes about when HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha Pratis, His Divine Providence, is focused on us in a very, very direct way. That's the symbolism of lighting the Chanukah Licht during Chanukah. Because by creating Ora, we're essentially saying that we want, at least during these 8 days, that these should be 8 days of Or Zoruah LaTzadik, of feeling a tremendous closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Hashgacha Pratis that comes about by that, which is represented by Ora.
Why? Because we were victorious on Hanukkah.
Oh, so why is, if I'm correct, why is that? In other words, why should Hanukkah be a time specifically where we're able to feel that closeness, that Ora, that is represented by Chanukah? So certainly one thing that we see during Chanukah is that God historically bestowed a tremendous degree of Hashgacha Pratis upon us during the holiday of Chanukah. The fact that we were able to defeat the Hellenists, you know, again, as we say in Hellenism, Rabin b'miyam b'yatim, t'meim b'yat t'horim, rishoyim b'yat tzadikim, you know, by all odds we shouldn't have been able to win. You know, militarily we were outnumbered. You know, the enemy certainly had a greater army, greater abilities. You know, it didn't make any sense that we should have been able to have beaten the enemy. And yet we did. Why did we? Ultimately because the Hashgacha Pratis.
It is not only militarily. The Nes of Chanukah was not only militarily. It was the Nes of...
Right. No, but I'm saying, if one were to analyze it from a military perspective, it doesn't make sense that we should have won. In other words, we won against the odds, you know, thus demonstrating the Hashgacha Pratis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's just what I'm trying to say. Why did we merit that? So there's a beautiful thought that Rav Shlomo Volbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the great Mashgiach of Eretz Yisrael, suggests in his Sefer Ali Shur, the second volume of Ali Shur, beautiful Musar Shmuzin from Rav Volba. Rav Volba suggests that what enabled the Nes of Chanukah to take place was the fact that the Jews were Moser Nefesh. The fact that the Jews pushed themselves, engaged in acts of self-sacrifice, that's ultimately what enabled the victory of Chanukah to take place and to bring the holiday of Chanukah in. We certainly know that in the days leading up to the events of Chanukah, the years leading up to the events of Chanukah, self-sacrifice was the name of the game. I mean, first of all, the Jews gave up their lives in so many instances, Al Kiddush Hashem, to sanctify God's divine name. Right? You know, the books of the Maccabees are filled with stories of how left and right, you know, men, women, children sacrifice themselves rather than go against the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a tremendous sense of self-sacrifice. And finally, the very revolt of the Maccabees themselves. I mean, that was a tremendous act of self-sacrifice. They were willing to stand up, not just to be swept away by the tides of Hellenism, but to stand up and to risk their lives in order to try to safeguard the Beis HaMikdash in Eretz Yisrael for Torah. Mesiras Nefesh is the characteristic which Chanukah is all about. That Mesiras Nefesh is the attribute of a tzaddik. Because what is a tzaddik? A tzaddik, again, as Rabbi B'chai defines it, is someone who lives with that constant sense of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's that sense of, you know, being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu which generates the ability, the koach ha-nefesh, to be able to engage in mesiras nefesh. So on Chanukah, our forefathers rose to the occasion and became tzaddikim, and as a result were zocha tzeora, not just to simcha, not just to be able to accept the difficulties in life with equanimity, but to ora, to hashkacha pratis. Chanukah then inspires us year in and year out, that we too, at least for these days, can rise to the level of tzaddikim, of people who feel that closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through being moser nefesh, through being able to stretch ourselves and engage in self-sacrifice, and that in turn will generate a sense of aura of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, if we're going to make ourselves close to Hashem, Hashem is going to make Himself close to us, and we're going to feel the hashkacha pratis in a very, very tangible kind of fashion. Right? So that idea of understanding aura in general helps us understand, I think, a little bit the significance of why davka lighting, you know, Chanukah licht throughout the holiday of Chanukah. Let's take this one step further. So Rabbeinu B'chaye, in the same piece, points out that it's not by accident that the number of lights that we kindle for Chanukah are 8 lights. Right? You know, there's an age-old question. It's referred to as the Beis Yosef Kasha, because the one who made it famous was Rav Yosef Kara, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. And his Beis Yosef, he asked the following question. He says, look, we all know the story of the miracle of the oil. There was only enough oil to burn for one day. It miraculously burned for 8 days. So therefore we light for 8 days. So ask the Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Kara. Wait a minute. Right, 1 day's worth was not a miracle. It was only really 7 days worth of a miracle.
Maybe.
So why light for 8 days? So everyone and his cousin has an answer to this question. Yeah.
8 is a malam in Hatera.
Oh, right. So 8... So there are many, many answers to this question. The Beis Yosef himself gives 3. There's a sefer called Ner Lameya, which is actually a compilation of 100 different answers to this question. Right? It's always good for multiple choice tests. You know, A, B, C, D, Z, A, B, B, C, C, all of the above, right? You know, it's any of the above, right? Many, many answers to this question. One possible answer to this question is the idea that 8 is not just a random number that, you know, oh, the oil happened to burn for 8 days, but that there's something significant inherently about the number 8. So Mrs. Alt suggested an idea from the Maral. The Maral writes the famous idea his Sefer on Chanukah, Ner Mitzvah, where the Maral writes that 7 is a number that's associated with nature, 8 is a number which is associated with the supernatural.
But didn't
okay.
it take 8 days to get
right, so,
fresh oil?
Right, but it's not clear that that's the case. In other words, there's some who say, well, it was 4 days there and 4 days back.
Yeah.
Right, but it could be that the number 8 has some kind of significance, not just an accident. You know that, and if it would have been 5 days away, we'd be lighting for 10 days. No, there's something about the number 8 which is uniquely significant. That's the Maral suggestion. The Rabbeinu B'chaye has a slightly different understanding of the number 8, and he says as follows: 8 is a number which is associated with the Beis HaMikdash in many, many cases. So what are the 8s that are associated with the Beis HaMikdash? He says, first of all, the Kohen Gadol had 8 different kinds of clothing. The Levim had 8 musical instruments, and here too we can't escape Tehillim. He goes back to Tehillim and he counts up the various instruments that are mentioned in Sefer Tehillim: Alamos, Mechilos, Neginos. You know, all these words which we spoke about as meaning different instruments. He counts 8 different instruments that the Levium used to have. In the Ketores and the Shemen HaMishcha, the oil which was used to anoint the kelim, the various vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, there were 4 different spices in each of them that had a fragrant smell to them. There were 8 badim, 8 poles that existed among the clay HaMikdash, the utensils of the Beis HaMikdash in the Mishkan. They were used to carry them from place to place. When a baby animal is born, it's acceptable to be a karbon after the 8th day, right? What's that?
Brit Milah,
right, but that's not specifically related to the Mikdash. In other words, in terms of karbonos, what's that? Right. But in terms of the karbonos, right, when a baby animal is born, after the 8th day, you can take it to be a karbon to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the first week of its life. It's not eligible to be a karbon, right? And he counts up these various different ideas that are associated with 8 that have to do with the Beis HaMikdash. So what? Right? So what's the connection between 8 and the Beis HaMikdash? So he says, again, somewhat along the lines of the Maharal, this world, you know, the world, the pre-messianic world, is always associated with the number 7. Why is this world associated with the number 7? So historically, people used to speak about the 7 different branches of wisdom that are found in this world. Right? This world is characterized by the week. You know, the week is the basic unit of time. So this world is associated with 7. When Moshiach comes, the messianic era, that, he says, is going to be associated with the number 8. Right? So it's similar to the Maral. The Maral talks about the natural and the supernatural. Rabbeinu B'chaye talks about this world and the messianic world. Right? The Mikdash is a little precursor of the messianic world already in the world in which we live. So in other words, the fact that there's so much 8 associated with the Beis HaMikdash is because the Beis HaMikdash represents a little bit of the Messianic era already in the pre-Messianic era. In other words, you want a taste of what it's going to be when Mashiach comes, go to the Beis HaMikdash. You know, and you're going to be able to taste through the number 8 all of what's going to happen after when Mashiach comes. 7 is the number of the lights of the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. We on Hanukkah light 8 lights, says the Rabbeinu B'chaye, because on Hanukkah we already get a little bit of a glimpse of what the Messianic era is going to be like. Now, how does that fit in with what we were talking about before? So, before we explain that Hanukkah gives us the opportunity to rise from the level of Yesharim to the level of tzaddikim, right? From the level of those who, you know, kind of do the right thing, think the right things, try to, you know, try to act properly, to a higher level of tzaddikim, where we really feel the sense of the pervasiveness and the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Something that's going to characterize Yemos HaMashiach is the sense of the imminence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Umala ha'aretz deyo es Hashem kamayim layom mechasim. The pasuk says that when Moshiach comes, the world is going to be filled up with an intimate knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? So Hanukkah represents our raising ourselves to that sense of closeness to Hashem, which ultimately is the bechina, is the element of Melech HaMashiach himself, of what the Messianic era is supposed to be like. So one thing which is appropriate to think about during Hanukkah is Messianic aspirations, right? To daven for Moshiach, to yearn especially for the day when Moshiach is going to come. And as he puts it, "Uzman Moshiach yachzru kol ha'umos le'amun aseinu," when Moshiach comes, everyone in the world is going to embrace our emunah, is going to embrace our faith. It sounds like he's saying that the world is going to become Jewish when Moshiach comes. You know, so that's something to think about as well. In other words, the notion that Hanukkah reminds us there's going to come a day where instead of being a persecuted minority, we're going to be acknowledged as the ones who have the truth, as the ones who really have been right, you know, all of these years, and that everyone else is going to want to embrace the ideas which we have. That's part of what Hanukkah is supposed to represent. And Hanukkah reminds us, like we said before, of our ability to be able to reach that madrega through Mesiras Nefesh, through stretching ourselves and trying to do something beyond our basic comfort zone. In practical terms, again, I'm speaking to myself more so than anyone else here, but in practical terms, something we should think about in terms of Hanukkah is one thing we can take upon ourselves to stretch ourselves. You know, to go beyond our comfort zone. We get into a certain routine in terms of Avodas Hashem, in terms of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Same old, same old. Are there things we can do to go a little bit beyond? A little bit of extra chesed, a little bit of extra learning, a little bit of extra davening. You know, are there things we can do to be moser nefesh, to do things that are, you know, at the beginning are maybe a little bit uncomfortable? You know, because they go beyond what we're used to. But the theme of Hanukkah is that very Mesiras Nefesh, going beyond. And, that Mesiras Nefesh, I think, would be something worthwhile to think about. Again, I'm speaking to myself, you know, in terms of how to make the most out of Hanukkah. As it happens, you know, nothing in life is coincidental. The Shloshim for the Kedoshei Har Nof is the first day of Hanukkah. You know, you talk about Mesiras Nefesh. I mean, our modern day example of Mesiras Nefesh, unfortunately, you know, that which is seared into our collective consciousness, you know, is the image of four Kedoshim who, you know, literally went up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in many cases in Talis and Tefillin, you know, in a state of what was tragic for us, but what was exalted Kedusha for them, people who gave their lives for no other reason than the fact that they were Jewish, that they were serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu as they were cut down. There's something, I think, just profoundly meaningful and poignant about the fact that the Shloshim for these individuals comes out on Hanukkah, on the first day of Hanukkah, the holiday of Mesiras Nefesh. You know, they represent, you know, we didn't see the Maccabees, you know, for us, these are our modern day examples of what Mesiras Nefesh is all about. People who gave their lives al Kiddush Hashem. And, you know, the conflation of the fact that it's Hanukkah and it's also the Shloshim, I think, you know, one of the best ways that we can honor the memories of those people who are the Kedoshim is to think about how we could be Moser Nefesh in a very, very small fashion in our own lives. What we can do to take what we're already doing and just push it a little bit more, to do a little more chesed, a little more learning, a little more davening. And, you know, in that way we can not only memorialize the Kedoshim, but utilize what Hanukkah itself is about, you know, in the fullest sense of the term.
Those families to the Almanot.
Yeah. You know, so I mean, that's an ongoing project, by the way. I mean, if people haven't given yet, there is an ongoing fund for the Almanot and the Yatomim. You know, the widows and the orphans from the Kedoshei Har Nof. I think I got an email last week that this fund had raised something in the area of $2.5 million. There was a matching fund.
Right. So the last I got an email last week.
It was about $2.5 million. I mean, it's probably gone up since then. But it's a lot of money. But there's a lot of money which is needed, unfortunately.
It's a lot of people who need it.
Yeah. The kids, you know, this idea of Mesiras Nefesh, I think, is something that we can take away, and then that will enable us to go from being Yesharim, hopefully, to being Tzadikim, which is what Hanukkah ultimately is all about. Next week, Bez Hashem, we'll also have a Hanukkah Shir, unrelated to tonight. And Bez Hashem, we'll see everybody then.